it was always a lie, which a lot of us on the left, critics of American power and the liberal international order, have said for a long time, right? It's always been selective. It's always been one-sided. That's what lots of people in the global South have said for decades. And now the difference is you've got key sort of linchpins of that order coming out and saying it. It was always a sham. And we always knew it was a bit of a sham. And that, I think, is a real watershed. That is a historical moment where even the great supporters of the system say, not only is it dead, but it was always a bit of a crock.
Yep.
No one wants to go in there when a random fucking tweet can change the entire foreign policy of the country. It's one of my favorite quotes in the reporting from recent weeks. These are the conditions under an imperial administration that's broken partly loose from capitalist interests while not representing the democratic will either. It's pretty chaotic for everyone. Contrary to talk that the second Trump administration would represent a solid commitment to a populist and isolationist concept of America first, it actually suggests a hybrid approach, abandoning important aspects of globalism while also trying to assert U.S. primacy across most of the globe, and in particular in what I like to call the West's B-side, that part of the world that pertains culturally to the West but isn't part of the political West. I'm talking here about Latin America. So that's what we're going to be focusing on today. Today, for the record, being the 30th of January, in case something major happens between the time of recording and the time of release of this episode. This episode is on Trump's so-called hemispheric foreign policy, and in particular, its attacks on Venezuela, which spectacularly resulted in the abduction of President Nicolas Maduro on the 3rd of January, rather inconveniently for many of us who were still on our holidays and so on. Very inconsiderate. You know, he's many things, Trump. He's inconsiderate for sure. So this is the second in a two-parter. In the last episode that we released, you'll have heard us talk with Jean-François Drolet about the radical right, its theoretical bases, and how this plays out in foreign policy, especially Trump's foreign policy. And here now we're focusing on Latin America. This, if you haven't gathered by now, is BungaCast, the global politics podcast at the end of the end of history. I'm Alex Hockley in Sao Paulo, Brazil. I'm joined again by contributing editor Lee Jones in London. Hello, Lee.
Hello, hello.
And back on the podcast again is Juan Rojas. It's been a little while. Juan writes extensively covering Latin America for journals, including American Affairs and Compact. So Juan, where are you calling us from? Is it anywhere near the capital of Latin American reaction?
Totally, yeah. I'm in Fort Lauderdale, kind of like Miami's junior.
Miami's B-side, Miami's own B-side, yeah. Maybe. Right. Very good. So both Lee and Juan have recent pieces in American Affairs discussing a lot of the issues that we're going to be talking about here. So to get started, I mean, that quote that I opened this episode from about the erratic nature of the Trump regime is actually from a private equity guy specialized in energy, which was quoted both in the Financial Times and in the Guardian. So, you know, 2026 obviously kicked off with that remarkable abduction of Maduro, but also with Trump openly declaring that the U.S.'s intervention in Venezuela was about oil. He said, "We built Venezuela's oil industry with American talent, drive, and skill, and the socialist regime stole it from us during those previous administrations, and they stole it through force. This constituted one of the largest thefts of American property in the history of our country." So this is a war for oil, as left-wing critics have long alleged to be the motive force in U.S. foreign policy, back to the Iraq war and onwards, it seems anyway. And here, it's maybe provided with only the thinnest ideological justification. The U.S. isn't just going to steal the oil. It's going to steal back the oil, therefore lending it a thin layer of justice to the U.S.'s expansionist and imperialist claims and actions. So maybe just to get started, because a lot has happened, obviously, over the past nearly a month since then, but it might be worth nailing this down for starters. Was this a war for oil or not? As I think listeners will know, Exxon said soon after that they had no interest in Venezuela's oil, so it wouldn't be profitable. And then Trump then excluded Exxon from the Venezuelan oil bounty it had just rejected, like saying, well, I didn't want it anyway. Well, you're not allowed it. You're not allowed it anyway. I said, I didn't say it. I said, I didn't want it. Well, then fine. Everyone's happy, except for, well, a lot of other people, a lot of upset people. Anyway, so who wants to deal with this first off?
Lee, you want to go ahead?
Oh, I was expecting you to come up with the magic answer as to why this happened. I mean, so the way that I see it is there are different factions within the Trump administration. As I say in the American Affairs piece, and as we discussed on the other episode, you've got the paleoconservatives, and you've also got traditional China war hawks and Pentagon types who would be more aligned with the people Juan writes about as neocons, who are, you know, quite keen on regime change
in this
places
case,
like
the
Cuba.
Miami neocons specifically.
The Miami, yeah, particularly the Miami ones, you know, Cuban descended, like to intervene, change regimes and so on. So I think, you know, you've got that neocon regime changey type people around. But to me, they're a minority in this administration. I don't think Marco Rubio is at all powerful, despite the fact that he is Secretary of State and National Security Advisor. I think, you know, that's the position that Kissinger held, but by no means is he as powerful as Henry Kissinger was. So there's an influence there. But what does that look like in practice? They're not going to intervene, invade, boots on the ground, change the regime, and install a friendly regime, which is what Marco Rubio and his crowd seem to want. They can't do that because the paleos that we discussed in the other episode won't let them do it. So instead, you get this bizarre decapitation operation instead, which leaves the regime intact, which somehow it's going to run it for America. So that's one thing. And the other thing is the oil thing is, I think, linked to this, the populist, personalist nature of the regime. The fact that because there is no democratic formation of the national interest to be expressed through an America First foreign policy, it's left to the determination of this populist, erratic figurehead who can therefore enact quite fantastical visions of the American national interest. So fantasies of grabbing mineral resources in Greenland and oil resources in Venezuela, even though American capital is not remotely interested in doing these things, right? So they're only consulted after the fact and just expected to go along with Trump's bizarre vision. And they don't want to because it's not economically viable. So you've got the kind of factions that are operating, it seems to me, but you've also got the populist aspects of the regime resulting in weird and bizarre policymaking. That's the way that I see it. But Juan, you're the expert on Venezuela, so you can tell me how wrong I am.
So I mostly agree with that. I guess the part I disagree with is I do think that Marco Rubio is very influential, actually. But I mean, yeah, what you're describing really gets at the heart of it, that there are these different factions with different interests. As far as specifically whether this is a war for oil, I think that Joe Weisenthal and Tracy Alloway at Bloomberg, I forgot who they were talking about, was saying that, or who they were talking to, but they were saying that in Trump's mind, this is about oil. Basically, right, that, right. Yeah, and exactly, yeah, yeah. Going back to the personalistic nature that Lee described, if Venezuela didn't have all this oil, probably Trump wouldn't have signed off on it. So Rubio and the other Miami neocons, because the thing is, he staffed a lot of the State Department with his allies from Miami. And basically all of the ambassadors to Latin America also are from Miami, his close friends. And yeah, they have a lot of influence and are going to be pushing in this direction. Similarly, within the national security state in general, the intelligence agencies, I can tell you firsthand that there are a lot of Latino descent neocons in extreme positions of power, and also the older generations bring a lot of that with them, that, you know, Cuba, Venezuela, Russia, blah 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 blah. But exactly, yeah, as Lee described, the problem is, yeah, you have the paleocons that basically would only agree to, like Trump, agree to go along with this as long as they get something out of it, which would be oil. And then the rest of, like, the national security apparatus also sees this as just, well, you know, at least we're, like, kind of subordinating an ally of